Hour number one begins of Dr. and Mrs. Future, presented by KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
And we're live. Happy Future Tuesday. Happy Future Tuesday, Mrs. Future.
It's a good one.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I call this the golden age of global warming. It's just like summer out there. It's a wonderful, almost spring-like day. There was a little wind this morning, but in general, it's just great to be here in Santa Cruz.
Though PG&E is going to be shutting down the power again, looks like Wednesday, Thursday time period.
Okay, well, I suppose it's a good time to take a long walk with an umbrella.
That's better than off of a short pier. You can definitely get wet that way.
Right.
Well, we're back in Boulder Creek now ourselves, so we don't have to worry about the power failure too much. But it looks like Aptos is going down, and Boulder Creek is too, if you're on the grid.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy. I imagine generator sales are up.
Yeah, that's true. We've spent a lot of time on our generator. We have two. I have one of these Hondas.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of maintenance this last week.
Well, the maintenance has been on the big whisper watt diesel generator that needs a lot, but it's worth it because it's a solid machine. It just keeps pumping away. So we have a 7 kilowatt whisper watt. Sometimes you'll see those on construction sites. And it's a great backup when there's no solar.
Right. They're pretty solid.
Yeah. So this was quite a week, Mrs. Future, right?
Boy, so many wonderful events this last week. We've been very busy.
Yeah. I remember Thursday. Thursday was a big day. We went to San Francisco.
Oh, yes. Thursday. Thank you to our friends who were all excited to go to the Thursday night adults only exploratorium night.
Yes. We had a lot of fun there. The new exploratorium out on
Pier 15.
Pier 15, yeah. What a facility. A beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah. If you remember the old exploratorium, it was a big warehouse with a bunch of MacGyver type contraptions that were teaching people science. Well, those days are gone. This is a real live science museum now.
What's nice, though, is that there's a lot of basic principles of science in the universe demonstrated that aren't necessarily digital. As a matter of fact, most of them are analog.
Yeah, that makes it so fun. You really get a depth of science information and hands-on experience that you can't get on the internet.
You actually look at a wave. We had a nice talk on cheese. Learned about the science of cheese.
Oh, right. One of the features of the Thursday night evenings is that there's a special science presentation. And this week, it was dedicated to how cheese is made and what microbes are in cheese.
Yeah, what fascinated me, this is a little takeaway, was that it's not just bacteria, like in blue cheese, but most of these cheeses also have a mushroom element.
Right. Sure, the little fungi.
Yeah, so the fungi play a big role in
fungi,
cheese manufacturing.
Fungi, mold, and what was the other one? A brine.
Bacteria, mold, salt, brine. Yeah, it's a living process. And it's something that, because our species loves cheese so much, there's a rich history.
Right. And of course, when you hear those words, fungus, mold, you get a little repulsed, but
no, those are good.
There are so many varieties, and so many of them are actually good for us and do live in our gut, in a healthy gut.
Yeah. Well, they say 95% of those little critters are basically doing good stuff for us. It's the lousy 5% that we worry about.
Yeah. But I loved the event. They called it the pairings because they pair science with foodie information. So you get a real in-depth description of deluxe fancy cheese, and they passed out samples that were wonderful. And then they also paired it with a beverage. So there was a distilled cider that had been washed with some kind of cheddar cheese. That was
a good takeaway. Yeah, they were saying that red wine is really a terrible thing to pair with cheese. I'm not terrible, but not as good as.
Right, that somehow it chemically is antagonistic to the cheese.
I've always noticed it kind of destroys your taste for the wine.
It's better to go with a white wine. Or in this case, a distilled cider, something sweet.
Yeah, distilled cider or white wine seem to be preferable, at least by the Exploratorium crew.
Right.
And then it was great to see Gabrielle. She was a guest host last week on the show here.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Remember her and catnip? How can you forget?
That's right. Our catnip expert.
And Mihai, they were great fun. And we called MZ. He lives in San Francisco, not too far from the Exploratorium, I might add. Just have to climb some stairs. But he was here. He was here in this side of town.
That's right. He missed out on our Thursday visit to the city because he was here in Santa Cruz.
However, we joined. So, we'll be there for future Thursdays.
Yes, absolutely. It's always fun to run around a science museum. I really love that stuff.
And that wasn't even the weekend. My goodness. And we went to the TransTech, which we interviewed the founder of the Transformational Technology Conference in Palo Alto.
Yes, a couple weeks ago.
Dr. Jeffrey A. Martin.
He hosted an amazing gathering of brilliant people, all of the people who are interested in how to use technology with your human biology in new and amazing ways, both to relax, to meditate, to reduce stress, to go to higher places. There was some VR there. It was really an interesting, interesting conference.
It was fascinating. And Jeffrey Martin's fundamental insight into the nature of human awareness is a new top addition to Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid. You familiar with that? The hierarchy of needs starts with physiological needs, then safety needs, then needing love and belonging, and then needing esteem, self-esteem. And then the top of the pyramid was self-actualization.
Right, for Maslow.
Becoming aware of who you are.
The most advanced
matrix of humanity.
Develop your consciousness and your state of well-being and freedom. It culminated in self-actualization.
It does.
Becoming who you're here to be.
And he died in 1970, so Jeffrey has taken the liberty to continue the evolution of human. What comes after you know who you are?
Right. If you know who you are and you're still not happy, then there's another level of actualization.
Well,
what does he call it?
Self-transcendence.
Self-transcendence, right. You don't want to pay attention to those negative voices in your head. You want to arrive at the place of the saints and the sages where you fundamentally believe in a state of well-being, where you're not constantly stressed all the time.
Or as they say scientifically, a persistent shift in your baseline state away from anxiety, fear, and worries to a fundamental state where everything is okay.
Right.
Things are fundamentally okay, even if your world is falling apart. Fundamentally inside, things are okay.
But we're not talking about just numbing your awareness with Xanax or something like that. We're literally talking about where you can hold the stress of your real existence in such a way that you know you can take it and you can transcend it, and that there are other things coming that you can process and look forward to, et cetera.
So yeah, you're fundamentally okay, even if thoughts don't impact your mood as much. So if somebody says something negative to you or whatever, it tends to affect your mood. But a transcendent state is where you are not affected. Like sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. A certain truth to that.
Right. And we're not talking Pollyanna. We're talking about informed well-being. So we'll be back. Dr. Future Show.
Let life flow, man. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Shout out to you, Gabby, listening in New Jersey right now. And we have a call, Mrs. Future?
We have Colonel Terry.
All right. Bring on the Colonel.
First of all, I'm calling to importantly say that I continue to be madly in love with the beautiful and highly intelligent Mrs. Future.
She's amazing. I can't argue with you on that one.
Every other gentleman I know who listens to your program, and that's dozens of us.
Yeah, she does that a lot.
You make me blush.
For sure.
That's sweet.
Really importantly, the Soquel Creek Water District Board is further considering tonight and I will tell you my view, but I don't say things that I haven't got facts and evidence to support. The Poop to Scoop Pure Water SoCal $130 million ripoff of 15,000 SoCal Water District customers will be considered further by the Board of Directors of the SoCal Creek Water District at 6 p.m. tonight for a couple of hours at the Capitola City Council in downtown Capitola to the right of the Capitola Police Station.
Well, what do you anticipate happening there tonight?
Well, Becky Steinbrenner has courageously on her own brought a lawsuit to stop them from failing to comply with the California environmental quality laws, most importantly, to have a full review of all the alternatives. And the alternatives, based on fact and evidence, are that for $19 million or so, they could do the Lockifer proposal of engineer Jerry Paul and not incur the $130 million cost. With water that doesn't continue to contain pharmaceutical and other pollutants in it, which is what they're proposing, by taking Santa Cruz's sewage, percolating it through membranes, which will never get out all the pharmaceutical toxicity and others, and putting that in the aquifer. Plus, it's completely unnecessary in terms of the water qualities. What is going on here is, as I learned in my Ralph Nader days, is government corrupted to steal from the taxpayers, in this case, the ratepayers and customers. And I'll be happy to debate anybody solidly on that with my facts and evidence.
Yeah, well, it's one of your pet causes right now, right?
I care about good government that's competent and honest, which we don't have a lot of in Santa Cruz sometimes.
And good water.
And good water, most importantly, smart lady, yes. Anyway,
yes.
Tonight...
6 o'clock, right?
Bless her. Here she is, without a law degree... She's caused the directors at SoCal, who are paying Bob Basso $8,000 a month to be their lawyer, to go out and hire an environmental bunch of hired guns and say, for $500,000 to fight Becky. And the only reason they've won is because they've lied and they've had cheats in the court so far.
Wow. They,
but she just wanted to, she wanted them to be restrained and required to look at all the alternatives, as the California environmental law requires them to do. They won't comply with it.
Right. Yeah, they're trying to rush something through before the next election cycle, right?
That's also true.
So beware if you're a water user and a rate payer.
And
look at what your water board is doing. These are not the same trusted people who have been in the past. They just came in the last election cycle. And if you can just hold on and vote them out, you'll be able to maintain relatively high quality water.
Fortunately, a couple of them have been long-term incumbents who I don't trust at all, and I don't say things I haven't got evidence for.
Right.
It's something really horrible is going on here, and it's a theft of $100 million from 15,000 water customers. They're proposing $400 a month increases in water bills for people living in trailers.
Crazy.
No, it's theft. But anyway, everybody who's impacted should show up. SoCal Creek Water District, Capitola City Council, 6 p.m. tonight, plan to stay for 2 hours, and watch Becky especially and myself challenge this horrible ripoff.
Okay. Oh, that should be quite the show.
The address one more time?
It's the Capitola City Council. It's downtown Capitola. It's to the right of the Capitola Police Station.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, so if they arrest you, you won't have far to go.
That's right. Well, in fact, they've threatened to do that when I stood up and protested they were doing wrong. Okay, but they haven't followed through. If they do, I know where the federal courthouse is if they do
well,
that.
Well, good luck,
yes,
Colonel
Terry.
Democracy works when you use it. I'm glad to see you out there using it.
Absolutely. Every impacted customer should show up tonight and demand they stop this Poop to Scoop Pure Water SoCal nonsense.
Okay.
All right.
Very much, smart lady.
Thanks for calling the show. Always happy to hear. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Until 6 o'clock then.
Yeah, it should be quite the show, Colonel. Yes. He's very passionate on that topic and has much to say
as
on it.
As we all should be. Yeah. I've noticed the water quality going down and down and down the more people develop without really understanding the impact. Putting sewage does not replace having good, clean water systems. You know, we have a watershed. Nature knows how to keep water clean. Human beings have to learn.
That reminds me of another event we were at, the Pachamama Alliance.
Oh, yes, right.
In San Francisco.
That's right. Another
water is a big issue there. That was the Amazon Basin.
That's right. That's right. The purpose of the Pachamama Alliance is to help the native Oshawar people who inhabit the area in south.
It's in Ecuador, right? In
east the Ecuador,
the Amazon, and, or the eastern Ecuador.
Yeah, and it's about 700 million acres that represent the headwaters of the Amazon River and are the source of the highest biodiversity of life in the world, and is the source of the water in the global jet stream that goes all around the planet. And they're working very hard to create a new form of government that honors the native people and their ancestral claims and their ancestral way of life, and allows them to have a constitution that gives nature rights.
Yeah, that's the unique thing, is that it's not just people anymore. They're thinking of the other species as well.
That's right. Yeah, well, we're in an ecosystem, and we need to have our leaders recognize that we can't kill some parts of the ecosystem without ultimately killing ourselves.
Keeping a balance on that. One of the cool things about the Pachamama Alliance was that instead of simply fighting the bad guys, as you say, they bought the land. They bought a lot of the land.
Well, it didn't happen overnight.
No, it took a while.
This fight has been going on since the 90s. And the first thing that the Pachamama Alliance did is they just decided that they wanted to help the native people there. And the very first thing I remember them doing was mapping the territory. And you learn so much about a culture when you understand what they map. When you ask these native people how they draw the lines of the borders of their land, they are not using the latitude, longitude. They're talking about sources of water. They're talking about tall mountains. They're talking about ancient trees. They're talking about areas where
more geological references,
animals,
desert, deserts,
cluster, etc. So when they map the area, they map the life in the area. And that is how they look at their territory. And that was the beginning. The first thing they did was learn to draw maps. And then as they were creating maps, they were also learning how to navigate the legal system, which is somewhat corrupt, but it is based on laws. And there are lawyers who can defend the rights of the people, given their understanding.
And once you know the biological maps, like the migration paths of the various creatures that live there, you can have more intelligent boundaries drawn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason why animals make the choices they make, and it has to do with what works for life.
Resources.
Right. Where's the water? Where's the fire? Where can you sleep at night? Nature has given us these answers for millennia.
their maps are just there waiting to be drawn, showing what's actually happening.
Right. Yeah.
So fascinating. We really enjoyed it. Plus, it's a great place to meet a lot of folks that care about the earth.
Yeah. And not to be a doomsdayer, but they did find the exact right balance between ringing the alarm from the fact that the article that we came up with last week about the 11,000 scientists who have embraced that the world is now in a dire state of emergency around global climate change.
Yes.
Well, Pachamama was talking about how the rampant burning of the Amazon rainforest by Brazil has accelerated the decline of the balance of climate in nature. And we are really just in the crisis. We're not waiting for the crisis. We're not reversing the crisis. And so their message was very much about how we can't sit still anymore. We have to act. We have to find ways to be living in a less impactful way on the earth. And they had Paul Hawkins speak about...
talked about 10 things that you can really do.
That's right. They call it the drawdown, which is solutions for global climate change that basically have to do with people keeping carbon in the ground, finding ways to get it out of the air as a greenhouse gas, and just in general, planting more green zones and creating more nature to battle the harm that happens because of roads and industrial pollution and all that stuff. It was a hopeful warning session from Pachamama, and all hands on deck.
And positive things that you can do, change. I like the drawdown where he did talk about how we can generate electricity more consciously, how can we grow food that improves the land as well as feeds the people, how to build cities, and how to create bike infrastructures, all kinds of details, LED lighting, transport, the new forms of transport that are now can be incorporated into city planning.
So Pachamama, PachamamA.com has all kinds of online programs so that you can organize and meet up with people in your local area to do something about it, not just worry.
Yes, so. And drawdown.org will get you to the world's leading resource for climate solutions, drawdown.org. All right, very good. Now, we didn't get to a single one of our stories for
yet.
The news yet, so, but you now know a little bit about what we did this last week and what Curdy Terry wants you to do this evening. So we'll get some news right after the break.
Here's Ben Fuchs with some tips for your health.
Hi, registered pharmacist Ben Fuchs here. I've been studying healthy bodies for 35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change your life. Many skin diseases and tissue breakdowns that are linked to skin cancers, wrinkles, and other dermatological diseases, including psoriasis, acne, and eczema, are associated with changes in the flow of skin electrical energy. One of the most important considerations for maintaining a healthy bioelectrical cutaneous current is an adequate skin salt content, and that's regulated by hormones produced in the adrenal glands. This is accomplished by the secretion of salt into the bloodstream and its uptake into skin cells. You want to eat salt and enough of it. It's best to use a nutritional form and not table salt, which contains various flow agents and only two minerals, sodium and chloride. I like Celtic sea salt or Himalayan pink salt, both of which contain at least trace amounts of all 92 essential minerals, including zinc, calcium, potassium, and magnesium. They also contain way less sodium and chloride. Add a teaspoon or so to a cup of distilled water and sip slowly. You don't need a lot. The first sips of the salty solution will taste like a delicious beverage, and it will gradually become less and less palatable until you reach a point where it's no longer drinkable. At that point, you'll know you've gotten an adequate dose of salt. Repeat as often as needed. Salt is excreted through sweat and used up quickly, so it's pretty easy to become salt deficient.
Trees went by, me and Del were singing, little runaway, I was flying, yeah, running down a dream.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Thank you, Mihai. Just sent me in an article on how Santa Cruz brings virtual view to climate change. If you go to the library, you can see some climate change VR information. Tim Robbins is doing some stuff at the library here, the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, the entrance, downtown branch. He's got one of the Oculus Quest units to show you about public education on climate change. Which reminds me, you know, the right near the public library is the Hub X. Mm-hmm. A facility, which is an open access to the public resource on understanding virtual reality. And certainly one of their projects is looking at ecosystems.
Sure.
Big projects.
Right. Yeah. They like the ecosystem AIs. They have some demos where they actually are turning programs loose to create life, as they call it, virtual life.
So this exhibit, the library, is funded by the American Geophysicist Union in conjunction with the California Coastal Commission. They have a program. It's called Sea Level Rise Explorer for 13 years old and older. And I guess you can see what happens when the ocean rises in those parts of the world.
That's a very powerful graphic. When you see coastlines disappear, as it's sort of like an iceberg sinking, right? But it's actually the continent just having the ocean rise.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a good use for the technology, eh?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so onward to some of the other stories. This week, NASA picked SpaceX, Blue Origin, and other smaller companies you probably haven't heard of to join the Private Moon Lander project.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay.
They announced the selection of SpaceX, Blue Origin, Sierra Nevada Corporation, Ceres Robotics, and Tyvak Nano Satellite Systems. Not the stuff for your house. Mm-hmm. Tyvak Nano Satellite Systems. Mm-hmm. To join in a commercial lunar payload services program. And they will vie to deliver robotic payloads to the lunar surface for NASA, which will be part of the process of returning astronauts to the moon by 2024.
Right. Yeah, this announcement by NASA really represents a whole new era of policy at NASA, where they are going to be allowing private companies to give them rides, and they're going to be contracting to achieve their mission objectives, and they're going to be giving private companies access to their research, their inventions, all of the things that NASA has been developing, and they're going to be a customer to these private companies. It's kind of a whole new era.
Yeah, it's like the government's financing private companies to explore the moon for NASA, part of a larger, which kind of makes sense. I mean, especially if you have an ecosystem of small companies that are into space, big contracts from NASA can certainly help your company.
Yes, apparently over the last year, NASA invited these 11 companies to submit proposals for lunar-based activities.
Lunar landers especially. Yeah, they have big ones. SpaceX has their towering Starship vessel. Reminds me of the 50s, you know, the big rockets landing on the moon. And also, there are concepts of landing multiple rovers on the moon as well.
Right.
And small one-off probes. The Tyvek nanosatellite folks are into small is beautiful concept. So it's designed to really take the advantage of the expertise of the private industry that are doing this. And it kind of makes sense. Trying to do everything within government can be very tedious and slow. So we have a caller, Mrs. Future?
Yes, we do. Woody in Ben Lomond has a question on climate. So let's head back to the conversation about climate change. Hi, Woody. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Woody.
Hi there.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hi there. Hey there.
Hey. I really like your program too. I've been listening to it for several years, and like other people comment, you know, nice program. Both very nice.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah, we definitely have a great audience here in Santa Cruz. A lot of conscious people out there trying to think of the right way to approach the future.
And you're ahead of the curve too, because you've been living off grid for a while, and now a lot of us, we're looking at these full-page ads in the periodicals about PG&E recommending we start getting generators for the next years.
There you go.
Yeah, well, as opposed to solar battery systems. Huh?
Well, the more you can take care of yourself, the less anybody else can tell you what to do.
Yeah, well, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
So I'm 70 years old, college educated, and all that kind of stuff. And the reason I got stimulated to call in was you were just mentioning about, I think, something at the library, climate change thing.
Yes.
And yes, a VR demo, apparently.
I'm sort of science-oriented fella. And, you know, I've been reading for a couple of years now and also watching some YouTubes where they're talking about, you know, the effect of the sun and lowered solar activity and its effect on our atmosphere and our magnetosphere.
Yes.
Oh, we have a really good article about that today. You're really jumping right on board with us.
And sound effects. We even have sound of the sun's effect on the atmosphere.
Well, then I'll just shut up and you guys can go ahead.
Well, but what did you want to say about that? Did you want to give us a few little insights?
It may be
a little
different
than
it?
What we're talking about here.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, so, you know, apparently, you know, the Earth goes through these cycles of heating and cooling, and for various reasons. And I think a lot of the people that I talk to, they think that a lot of this is anthropogenic, you know, caused by man's activity on the planet. Mm-hmm. And from what I'm reading, far more of, you know, the large-scale changes happen from sun activity increases and decreases, and also volcanic activity, interesting.
Well, there is a lot of information about all of that. Certainly, both are true. There is a lot of man-made activity that is affecting our ecology, and there's a lot of natural activity from the sun, the solar wind, and just where we are in the galaxy. And all of those things have an effect, and the Earth is constantly adjusting.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I know this is a politically charged topic in today's environment, and that's unfortunate.
Well, the question is not so much whether we're not, we are or we're not, we are, but whether or not it's going to have a devastating effect on the ecosystem or not. And to me, I think it's better just to, for us, we take the attitude of just, do you want to soil your nest or not? You know, let's do it as clean as we can and start there.
Sure. And it's really about having a conversation that creates choices and stops us feeling paralyzed. So we're not trying to validate who to blame. What we're trying to do is think about how to live on the planet so that we have the best possible outcome.
Well, of course. I mean, you know, we all want to keep our environment clean because we have to live here. And that's just plain, you know, good housekeeping.
Well, not everybody feels that way. A lot of people feel like nature is one big vast waste basket, and it's so big that in small doses you can make a profit and run off with the money and somebody else will clean up the mess. There's a lot of people who act like that.
Yeah. There's also crazy solutions like dumping our garbage in the volcanoes. There's some very interesting YouTube movies on, or shooting them into the sun.
Yeah. Well, now that sounds actually pretty good, shooting it into the sun.
Oh, it's pretty expensive to get it off
well,
the Earth.
Yeah, if it was cheap to get off the planet, maybe, yeah. You know, it's just, you know, it costs thousands of dollars to send a gallon of water into space.
Well, of course.
Yeah, sadly, it's not there yet. But I have I find faith that in the species and our ability to think our way out of a box.
And
we're pretty good at that.
I mean, we're just as good at messing things up as we are at fixing it. It's all about how we think about it and act.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to say there's far more, at least out here in California, I'm a third generation person out here, far more consciousness about it, you know, in our lifetime compared to other lifetimes, like, for instance, during the Gold Rush in 49, you know, where hydraulic mining was used to wash away whole hillsides and, you know, just terrible degradation. Real clear cutting of the forests and, you know, just terrible stuff that's happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think California is really ahead of the game and that it's a good thing that we have the visionary kind of government that we do, try and keep the air nice and the water clean and just make sure that we don't damage the ecosystem.
A couple of things that I missed out. My kids have moved back to the east, and I visited Chicago and Detroit, and I wanted to see one of those burning rivers, but I was too late by a decade.
Yeah. When I lived in Philadelphia back in the 60s, they talked about how the Schuylkill River was on fire at one point.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Well, us humans, we sometimes have to learn things the hard way.
So far, we haven't seen the San Lorenzo River catch on fire, and I don't think it's going to.
No. I think they want to get the salmon back.
Right. Yeah, let's just have the seats under the water supervisors catch on fire so that from the hot seat, they don't do anything that isn't good for the general population.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun last year. We had a third grade class come in who were studying the water of San Lorenzo River, and they were taking samples and giving their reports on the air. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, last year there was a lot of water, and so they found that the nature was pretty happy. But this year, probably if they did the same test, they'd find a lot more stress.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see, you know.
Well, certainly I have personal observation of the forests up in the Sierras up at the 5,000 foot elevation and above. And, you know, the last 2 years there was, you know, real good rains and snowpack. And the forest just looks remarkably different. And all the oak trees while you're going on the foothills up from the Central Valley into the Sierra, those oak trees just have looked so good for 2 years. Mm. So let's all hope we get some more rain here.
Yeah, definitely. Pray for rain. It's that time of year. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so
much. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Bye-bye. To our next break. You want to see anything before we head out?
Okay, as I mentioned, that this Santa Cruz was Tim Robbins was giving examples of VR yesterday. Remember that?
At the library.
At the library. So I think they have the Quest there at the library. You can probably ask them about it if you want to see it. See you after the break. Hey, welcome back to the show. Yes, let's look at the larger ecosystem for a moment.
Okay.
It's a very interesting info on the details of the sun from NASA's Parker probe. They're out and they're hot. Now you can look at a host of science data that we've collected recently about the sun through NASA. Now, this is a big deal because, you know, a lot of people think that, well, maybe the sun is responsible for climate change. You know, if it gets warmer, then all the planets get warmer. And there's some possibility that that might actually be a piece to the puzzle. Here, so NASA has sent out the Parker probe to take a closer look at the sun and looking at some of the great mysteries of the sun, like why is the surface of the sun so much cooler than the atmosphere. Also, the data is now available for you to look at yourself.
That's right. They're looking for input from the citizen science community, and they have all of the data from the past two flybys closest to the sun that is available via a link here to go and see what kinds of research is available.
Yes, on board are four science experiments, fields experiments, number one, which studies the electric and magnetic fields of the sun, the integrated science investigation of the sun, which measures high-energy charged particles in the solar wind and the corona, the particles that are coming out that can affect our electronics. And then there's the wide field imager, which images the solar wind, and we can see it in more detail. Also, there's the solar wind electrons, alphas, and protons investigations, which looks at the different types of particles that are in the solar wind. And all of that is available for us to pour through. There are two flybys. One was October 31st through November 12th of 2018. Another was March 30th through April 19th of 2019. And there was a much more data on the second flyby because the engineers were able to increase the amount of data from the spacecraft that were sent back to Earth. They had better data return rates than expected. Mm-hmm. So far, there's no central hub for all this data, but NASA has provided us with a list of websites to explore, which we have on our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Right. So if you're curious about what the Parker probe has been up to and what we now know about the sun, then check it out.
Check it out. Also, the probe has done a third flyby, and it is now doing another one on January 29th, 2020. So that data has yet to be posted. Certainly not the 2021, but the third flyby has been finished and it needs to be put out there. Meanwhile, you have the other two flybys to check out. Pretty fun, huh?
If you're a data junkie.
Yeah.
If you're, or as Bruce likes to say, if you're a space weenie.
Yeah, right. Back to Earth, Elon Musk has tweeted his congratulations to Ford for their all-electric Mustang.
There you go. In the era of social media,
yes,
your competitors are your friends. So you congratulate them on their accomplishments.
Yes, Ford had unveiled their all-electric Ford Mustang Mach-E crossover SUV on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Musk said, congratulations on the Mach-E. Sustainable electric cars are the future. Excited to see this announcement from Ford, as it will encourage other car makers to go electric too.
Yeah.
And that's what Musk wrote on Twitter.
That's right. Twitter is where you can let it all hang out, what you really feel.
They think the new Mustang is going after Tesla's new crossover SUV that's coming out next year, the Model Y, and that this directly competes with it.
Yes, well, not everybody wants a Tesla. Some people would rather have a Ford as long as it's reliable, right? Price, status, convenience, these are all factors. But the fact that everybody is going to have an SUV electric option coming from Ford is a win-win for all.
Well, they're in the same price range. The Model Y from Tesla, the crossover SUV, is expected to be around $40,000 starting price. And the basic version of the Ford Mustang Mach-E will be around $45,000.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be available immediately.
How long do we have to wait?
It looks like we have to wait until next car season at their very earliest, like next September.
Okay. Well, that's not bad. Planning an electric car purchase is a big deal. I think there's a learning curve there.
Yes, production of the Model Y slated to begin the summer of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the other areas of development, of course, is the whole autonomous part of the cars. Not only are they running on electrical energy, but they are also running on artificial intelligence, more and more so. And there are a number of competing schemes for that. I talked to one expert on this at the
TransTech Conference.
TransTech Conference, right. And from what I have gleaned, the Tesla system is out there. It's actually in operation, and more so, more autonomy than just about any other model car. But the other car manufacturers aren't that far behind, maybe a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And they are developing new schemes that are, in some ways, are more advanced than what Tesla's operating.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the Google Waymo system is like years ahead of Tesla
mm-hmm.
in sophistication. But Tesla's is pragmatic and is being deployed now.
Sure. Well, the great thing about Elon Musk is that he is envisioning a world in the future where we have sustainable ecosystems. We have a very functional electric grid getting most of our power from the sun, a renewable source, and the transportation system is non-polluting. And anything that we can do to get closer to that model is great. We should cheer for it. The fact that it's taking us a long time to get there because we have to gear up. We have to learn new things that we didn't know before. We have to figure out how to make the electric car as efficient as the 100-year-old gas car has become, right?
Yeah, it's going to take a little while.
It does. It takes a while.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. On the way here, we stopped to get some water, and the Scotts Valley water near the movie theater.
And what's Scotts happening? Valley. There's some construction there.
Well, first of all, I noticed it was hard to park,
mm-hmm.
which is somewhat unusual. And then I noticed the big chunk of the parking lot was cordoned off and that these big Tesla signs were evident, suggesting that they're putting in Tesla chargers.
That's right.
In Scotts Valley.
There's going to be new places where you can go and get a charge.
Now, I wonder how much, whether or not you'll be able to charge other cars there too at all. It seems to me like, you know, we figured that out with gasoline stations for gas cars where you'd have a variety of grades depending on the type of vehicle. It seems like the fuel stations of the future would be like that, too. They'd be able to have different adapters for different types of cars, or maybe a standardized way of charging would be in the cards.
Well, it's a brave new world. Standards in battery power for your cars, that definitely sounds like the standards have not yet been developed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Seems like we're still working on that.
And yet, the fact that they're putting in power charge stations means that they know what to aim for. Somehow, somebody is paying attention to the, specs.
It's a moving target. As the batteries get better, they have different charging profiles mm-hmm. of how they will be charged. And so I guess if you have a smart charger, you'll be able to put in different profiles and put in, you know, depending on what vehicle you're running. You
right.
probably have to punch in your type of car before you put in the charger.
Well, you know, because future. We're off the grid, we're yeah. a little slow to be on top of this one because we can't just get an electric car. We have to get a whole electric car power charging
yeah. Yeah, that's another
apparatus,
thing.
Yeah, which is going to cost us probably $10,000 just for that.
That's the other thing is that cars actually take more power than a house.
Right.
So I also learned this week that the cars are really pack a lot of power in them and it actually probably could act as a portable power supply for your house in the event that you have like a PG&T shutdown or
right. So
that the car actually has a lot of energy.
You know, if you're thinking of going autonomous with your electricity, think about your car because it'll power your house.
Yeah, I've heard of folks powering portable stages.
Mm-hmm.
With their
batteries. With their Prius batteries, sure.
Yeah. Prius will work for a while, but they're not nearly as much charge as a Tesla.
Well, my sister had an electric car for a while, and she came to visit us in the mountains, and we had quite a harrowing experience going to three or four different poor and inadequate charge stations.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
That was a couple years ago.
There were a whole bunch of different chargers and a whole bunch of different people that were trying to charge their own cars, and it was a nightmare. So
standards, here we come. Huh? We really need to get that going. But that the Tesla charges look like they're coming up in Scotts Valley now, so that's a start.
All right, folks, Dr. Future Show. We'll be back after this break for traffic, news, and weather. And this is KSCO Santa Cruz.
All right, see you shortly. Hopefully with some people from TEDx. Maybe Irene.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Mrs. Future and I will be now talking to Irene Sucrate, who is representing TEDx Santa Cruz. For those who don't know about TED, TED was a conference starting in the early 80s called Technology, Entertainment, and Design, and brought together the leaders in those three fields. And I was at the first one, believe it or not.
Yeah,
I had a great time with that. But now it's spread. TED is now all over the world in hundreds of cities and towns, and Santa Cruz is no exception.
That's right. In fact, Santa Cruz is hosting our own local TED called TEDx Santa Cruz for the fifth time this year.
Wow.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got to get your microphone up, Irene.
There, Irene.
Oh, I talk to myself all the time, trust me.
Yes. Well. Okay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So do you have a theme this year for TEDx?
We do. Actually, when we started TEDx Santa Cruz around 2010, we were one of the first regional licenses that was granted. Mm. My own company, I was working with a corporate special events and meeting planning company at the time, and we had helped actually support a lot of the early TEDs logistically. So I knew about this little conference that held 200 people in the Monterey Bay.
Yes, right.
Yeah, because you were there, right?
Yeah, we were there. We were in the Stagehand Union.
Cool.
Well, the first one, I was a journalist. And later on, we were actually professional media people. So we got hired to
we were behind the cameras when they started videotaping.
It's so fun.
And before that, we were doing projections on the big screen, in the early days.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay, you want some buses to take people around, or we're picking people up at the airport. We were doing some logistics, and as it grew and got crazier and crazier, it was a little like, wait a minute, why is Al Gore and Bono and why are all these people going to this teeny little conference?
Ideas worth sharing.
Yeah,
cross-pollination.
That cross-pollination, that was the thing, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
I think Al Gore launched Current TV right around then.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. God, remember that old chestnut.
I do.
Yes,
I do too.
Characters at Burning Man.
I had great hopes for Current TV.
Me too.
Didn't pan out.
No, I think they sold it to RT.
Yeah. That's a different show.
Or it's a show on Artino.
That's right. In around 2010, we were granted one of the first regional licenses. And the core team that came together, honestly, we were so lucky because we just happened to have a skill set that could launch something really professional and beautiful looking. And we were writers and professors. And we have John Luini, who had a production company, and I had produced special events all over the world. And so we got really lucky with our team.
That was the one at Cabrillo College?
That was the first one, was at Cabrillo College.
Yeah, and I remember some of the local celebs that were there. We had Annie Glass speaking, and we had Joe Jordan doing an amazing piece, and we had Kyle Tierman.
That's right.
I'm sure you can remember some other folks.
But amazing local people. And
we had found out about it because the founder of that group was at a conference we organized the year before called the Design Renaissance.
Was that David? Show.
Yeah. David, yes.
David Warren, yeah. Right, David Warren was the founding licensee of TEDx Santa Cruz.
He was at Design Renaissance.
Yeah, he announced it from our conference, Design Renaissance, that he was excited to bring TED to Santa Cruz.
So excited.
Yeah.
So. And David, we are still essentially the same core team. I just left David. We were curating some speakers just before I got here. So when we kind of got together, this group of kind of interesting people that could launch this platform pretty quickly probably much more easily than a lot of new teams that had come together. We kind of decided we were going to curate this 3 or 4 event arc. And we had the idea for this 2011 Engage, 2012 Open, 2013 Activate. Actually, I think it was 14. 2015, the logical conclusion of all of that, radical collaboration. Mm. And so we were thinking well beyond where we were in the moment as we got the license. Yeah, and it's still so fun to work with all those people.
So after radical collaboration of 2015.
Mm-hmm. You're now at the Art of Hope.
Hope?
That's right. That's our theme for 2019, the Art of Hope. We took a little bit of a breather. This is an all-volunteer organization, and we had some life passages. You know, my father passed away. I needed some time in that space.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's
some great. Had some health issues, and we sort of said, we got everybody to radical collaboration. Things are looking good. Let's lay it down for a year. Well, that turned into a few years. And then, as everybody knows, the political climate and the realities of some of the huge challenges of our time globally. And nationally and locally.
Yeah, a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. And we had a lot of people come up to us and ask us individually, are you guys going to do another TED? Because we need one.
It's true. It's like despair has been law of the land, right?
There's a heaviness. Yeah. And
It is quite a juxtaposition. I think we were at a TEDx in Berkeley last year. A year before, I guess it was. And it was amazing people, world class in biogenetic engineering and space and AI. And yet all the journalists in the town were about a mile away with helicopters above as there was a
student protest of a conservative
speaker on the campus.
Right.
And that was getting all the attention, right? As opposed to all this genius that was just a mile away.
That's right. The political reality that has been such a distraction in a time when these challenges are bearing down is really, it's beyond unfortunate. It's disastrous, really, in my view.
Yeah, well, it's so important, the Art of Hope. It's so important that the small groups of people who make the evolutionary shifts all the time...
That's absolutely true.
...are still amongst themselves looking for solutions and cooperating. So we have to keep that in mind.
And that's where we got to. We were just like, okay, if we curate a TED... somebody said to me once, I think it was one of our speakers, and I would have to go back to all of my copious notes on 22 speakers and see who said it, because I want to say that so many people are having this emerging thought. And he was talking about climate change and hope. And he said, the only logical response to climate change is hope. And I thought to myself, this is an emergent thought. Really, if we were parents talking to children about a situation that seemed rather desperate in the moment, nobody in that moment would say to our children, there's no hope here. We just have to give up and starve to death. Yeah, we're just going to have to suffer through our long, slow death. And that's not a logical response now.
I can't say the only time I've kind of felt that way in the past was maybe as a kid when it felt like we were going to have a nuclear war and we had hope that it wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So far.
See, hope wins.
Yeah.
That's right. Again.
Again. So may as well stick to it. We'll be back after this break. Dr. Future Show with Irene Supre and this break.
Welcome back to the show. We are talking about TEDx.
Santa Cruz.
Yeah, TEDx Santa Cruz with Irene Supre.
Supre. It's
Sucre?
Greek.
Supreik. Okay. About hope and the good stuff.
There is so much good stuff. And in this moment, people needed to hear it and they asked us for it. Mm. And so we decided on the theme, the Art of Hope. And this started a discussion about what hope was.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah,
is
very
it,
true core.
Is it a verb? Is it a practice like meditation? I said, yes, it's all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it the last thing in Pandora's box?
Yeah. It's a myth.
Yeah. No, it's not a myth. It's not a myth. We found it and we're going to share it. So we have an amazing lineup of speakers. We had over 100 submissions.
Wow.
And as we usually do. And as a team, we curate down to about 20 to 22 speakers.
So what some of them gives you the most hope of the ones that you brought in?
All of them do. But mm-hmm. I want to say I was speaking with one of our speakers today, Tim Goncharoff, who is the Zero Waste Programs Manager for Santa Cruz. And he's been here and at it for a long time. And Tim has a very folksy way of narrative storytelling. Mm. But he is going to share with our community the idea that small levers applied to big problems can provide massive change. And the ways that some of the policies that Santa Cruz has put in place and ordinances we've passed, the ways they have rippled through this country mm-hmm. and even globally. Mm. And he said, I don't know that Santa Cruz really understands what an outlier we are and what a leader and how many people have looked to us. So I don't want to get into too much detail about his talk, but I will just say that if a company comes in and, for instance, is using styrofoam, mm-hmm. and we passed an ordinance that got rid of styrofoam in Santa Cruz a long time ago because it's hideous, I will just say that not only have we had an impact on the one store that they wanted to open here, but they've adopted the things that we requested, sometimes across their entire national chain.
Ideas whose wow. time have come.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to share sort of, you know,
sort of how we're passing on memes from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, right? That's right. We've got some viral policies.
Yeah.
Right.
And that just gives me so, and I think people need to hear those things. Like, we take for granted the very progressive community that we live in. And I will just say that when I moved here 32 years ago, I was shocked that you could go into any store in this area and find organic anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is so weird. And then I would go home to New England and I would say, do you have any organic milk here? And they would look at me like I was an alien for years, right? So this is some of the stuff that Tim's going to talk about, the things that we're sort of swimming in this soup of, this is our lives. Well, it's not the lives of everyone else in the country.
No, it isn't.
We started early.
But we're exporting a lot of it, which is fabulous. That gives me a lot of hope.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It reminds me of a few years ago when I was in the East Coast, that was a friend of mine who was a vegetarian. He asked for a vegetarian sandwich at the deli, and I had asked for a ham sandwich. And he made two ham sandwiches, took out the meat for the vegetarian one.
Here's your vegetarian lettuce and tomato and bread. Right. Yeah. Can't give you any mayonnaise.
Exactly. So we have lots of other speakers. We have an astrophysicist, Karel Siles, from UC Santa Cruz. She's going to talk really about the idea of each of us bringing every skill set we have to the problem of climate. And again, this is always a fine line for me because I don't want to give too much away to our audience, but I would just say this. If you did the work to become an astrophysicist, you might walk into a room and say, I'm an astrophysicist everywhere you went, you know? And she is that, but as she pointed out, this issue of climate has given me the opportunity to peel back other layers of who I am. And what I can tell you is I'm a climate activist. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful thing because I think a lot of us are asking, what do I have to bring to this? It's so overwhelming.
Yes, everyone has their area that which they can contribute. Is to figure out what your area is your self-actualization, as Maslow would say.
That's right.
Yeah. An astrophysicist, I would think that she would be looking at the larger ecosystem of the solar system.
She was doing both.
And then she seeing was, it how it relates to the planet.
And that's what happened. Yeah. And she kind of said to me, she works at a very high level around the issue of black holes. Hmm. That's her
galaxy
of,
then.
Yeah, right.
Not just the solar system.
Not just the solar system.
Wow.
And we were talking and she said, you know, the universe is fascinating. Things crash into each other and it provides you a new view of something else. Hmm. And I said, yes, and it sounds like your life here on Earth, that happened too. You crashed into something and it revealed a new view for you. And she actually, I heard her on the phone sniffling and I said, are you crying? Mm. And she said, yes. She said, yes, that's exactly what happened to me.
Wow.
And so people are going to tell very personal narratives framed in the area of their expertise. And that's what I love about TED. It's not an academic talk. It's not a talk that you're giving to the Chamber of Commerce. These are intimate, personal talks we're giving to our community that are then amplified.
That are brought out to share on a larger scale. Yeah. Yeah, that's reminiscent of another group called Tell Me More coming out tomorrow night, or Wednesday night, that does that. As
yeah,
well,
Dan and Michael's on
where
me.
People just tell personal stories from their lives and what they've learned from them and share them with the public.
So beautiful. Yeah. And the human brain is wired for narrative story. That's the deal. That's how we moved beyond pointing that there's a tiger that's about to attack to giving the longitude and the latitude of a threat and how quickly it's going to be upon us and... Yeah.
So is there a chance for the audience to interact with the speakers afterwards?
There is, and that's always a lovely thing about TED, that the speakers are encouraged and generally are always there for the whole day. So we take a couple of breaks. Unfortunately, Santa Cruz is kind of an odd place for venues. I would love it if we had a venue where we could hold 600 or 700 people and then they could dine together because it's in that space that, you know, you have that hour to kind of bear down on those ideas and how it made you feel.
Right. Yeah. The response, the impression that was made.
Yeah. We do have a couple that are all right, but there's nothing really that fits all of that. So we've kind of jerry-rigged that experience every year. We'll be doing it again. People will go to lunch. There'll be restaurants they can talk to each other at.
Yeah,
I think speakers.
It was at the Crepe Place 1 year, I remember.
We did a reception there, but that only held 150 people, and there were 690 people
at TED. Just not big enough. Yes.
So,
The lobby of the Rio doesn't quite do it.
Yeah, it doesn't quite do it, and that's maybe somewhere in our future.
The after party.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Cabrillo was kind of nice.
It was, and we did an outdoor picnic, but if it had rained that day, and that's always the thing, right?
You need, it's November. You cannot count on the weather.
You need a weather backup.
Yeah, what will you do if the PG&E pulls the power?
Yeah, what will we do?
Generator?
You just paralyzed me.
Oh, yes. Put it on your checklist. Backup power for the lights and mics.
Boombox and flashlights required, people.
All right. Well, let's tell people about the date and the tickets and the website and anything
absolutely.
Else.
They want to know more.
Yeah. The date is December 7th, Saturday. It's an all-day live event. The hours are 9 to 4. Tickets are $75, and they are on sale at Eventbrite, and you can also go to TEDxSantaCruz.org. It will take you to a ticket link.
TEDxSantaCruz.org. Very good.
And so we're looking about 20 speakers from our own community.
Yes, including Ryan Coonerty, Laura Love Harden, who is an award-winning author and editor, book agent with the Idea Architects. Mariah Roberts, who worked on the Chanticleer Park project. She's going to share. David Lee, who does Tech for Good.
Mm-hmm. Anything on the homeless issue?
Oh, gosh. Well, all in none. But I do want to say we're still curating, so I'm trying to address that issue in some way that is meaningful in our
space.
Yeah,
we're all trying to figure that one out.
We are, and you know, we do have a county supervisor who will be speaking to some of that, and
Well, fantastic. Well, good. I look forward to going. This is going to be wonderful. Rio. Good. Rio's a great environment. So many great events we've
had. Yeah, we're going to get our tickets right after the show today.
Good. I'm so glad. And I do want to say that about ticket sales. Santa Cruz is notorious about waiting till the last minute. We're all waiting for a better thing to come along.
Yeah.
This happens every year. The event sells out every year. And then everyone tries to hustle everyone they know in our team for tickets. Please buy your tickets early. Ticket sales are open now. Don't make us sweat out whether it's going to sell out. And then it does every year, and we're just in a panic.
Yeah, at the last minute.
Get out there, Santa Cruz.
Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you, Irene, for being on the show.
Right.
We appreciate
the
your
art
attention.
Of hope.
Thank you both for having me.
It's going to be a great TEDx this year. I can't wait.
Thank you.
Okay. Once again, TEDxSantaCruz.org.
Or Eventbrite.
Or Eventbrite for TEDx. Okay, folks.
Very good.
Future show. We'll be back after this break.
Thanks for listening. Okay, there you go. That was fun, huh?
Yeah.
I'm going to see some interesting
TEDx
characters.
Santa Cruz is such an inspiring event. Every time I've been, I just come away with brand new ideas and so many great emotions and insights and hope. This is going to be a really good one, the Art of Hope.
Yes, and it gives me hope that we can have a true renaissance. And we could be the start of it in this area. Not that it hasn't started already, really. But one of the sparks in the area here. So,
that's going to be at the Rio Theater.
Yes, the Rio Theater is a wonderful place to see events locally. We've had many amazing experiences in that arena.
All right, so what else do you have for us, Dr. Future?
Well, let's see, what do we want to talk about?
A
very interesting article on how objective reality doesn't actually exist according to a quantum experiment. That gets a little deep.
Prove it.
Yeah, let's see. scientists are starting to think more seriously about hibernation pods. Not such a crazy idea for traveling to other planets. It takes 9 months to get to Mars, for example. Wouldn't it be nice just to go to sleep and wake up there?
Works for me.
So I got a really bunch of information on that topic. It looks like all the things that we've learned from putting people to sleep for, let's say, emergency trauma situations, that some of that knowledge from the trauma world can be applied to sleep hibernation in space travel.
Oh, right. Yeah, so when they artificially induce a coma that people can remain stable while they come up with the right healing process.
That sort of thing.
Oh,
exactly.
So you don't have to be injured to do that. You can just voluntarily opt in.
Plus, you could be placed in a container that protects you from all the radiation that's in space.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's harder to do that when you're walking around. You wouldn't have to deal with boredom. You wouldn't have to deal with people feeling pent up. All the issues that come from being in a confined space for extended periods of time. Exciting research going on in suspended animation. I wonder if it would affect your aging process.
Sleeping? Sleep is good for your aging process. Slows it down.
Okay, body, focus on repair for a while.
They call it doctor sleep.
Yeah. No new damage. Let's fix the old stuff for a while, shall we? There's evidence to show that designer babies are maybe just 2 years away now.
Oh, brother.
It's a CNN piece. The reason why we would have designer babies initially would be disease. You'd be able to cure genetic diseases. It's a very interesting topic. There's a great Netflix documentary.
Oh, yes. In fact, we wanted to talk about that documentary. We've been really eating it up for the last couple of days. Talk about the future. It's called Unnatural Selection.
That's right. Unnatural Selection.
It's a Netflix miniseries that delves into CRISPR-Cas9 and gene editing and everything from the community decision-making process to the biohackers to people who want to breed phosphorescent dogs. There's so many areas that this just taps that are fascinating and scary.
Yeah. What's exciting about it, and what's scary about it at the same time, is that the technology is fast, cheap, and out of control. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't require a university laboratory to be able to do genetic modifications of your own DNA.
Well, and the fascinating truth is that nature does not stay constant. And it may stay constant a little longer than if we go in and start mutating everything. But the fact is that when 100,000 years goes by, the species that were here 100,000 years ago may or may not be here. And the mutations that have been introduced will be unpredictable. So the idea of species identity is limited in time. And this question about intentionally mutating the DNA, which is before us at this time in history, is something that changes the rules of nature, because we are participating with nature, not just having it done to us.
A lot of risk, a lot of benefits, a lot of consequences, a lot of emotions in this
and
arena.
Who gets to decide? That's one of the big questions. What can be done and who gets to decide?
With the movement of democratizing biotech, well, there was one group that was experimenting with drugs that usually would cost a lot of money to take, like HIV drugs.
Yeah, that was one of the storylines.
And the biohackers figured out how to create the drug much more cheaply on their own. Mm-hmm. But then you don't have the permission to actually sell it to people in this country because you're not coming from a regular drug manufacturer.
Right.
You're designing it in your basement. So how do you get it distributed? And they grapple with issues like that. And a lot of it has to do...
The issue is you, as a person, have self-sovereignty.
You have the choice. Yeah, that's
the
answer.
You have the right to experiment on yourself.
You can experiment on yourself. You can inject yourself with whatever you want, though... It's fraught with complexities, and those complexities can be understood by the community that you're working with. In that sense, the biohacker community, they showed in the documentary how they talk to each other regularly on Skype and FaceTime, and that they were making decisions on dosage and things like that based on the results that they were getting. It was all trying to figure that out. Now, that's why Big Pharma has clinical trials and all these sorts of things to figure out dosage and side effects and that sort of thing. But with the cost of some of these drugs in the mainstream costing $100,000 a shot, it creates a desire for people who love the ones that are sick to get them better, and they don't have the money and they don't want to go bankrupt. They're looking for alternatives.
And right. It's a different conversation than the idea that quacks are going to get rich selling bogus drugs to desperate people. This argument is about individuals who have, through the internet and through their own efforts, accumulated a level of expertise that empowers them to make choices for themselves. The idea that they should be allowed to do that and supported through some kind of a community information process to inject themselves is a really scary conversation. And yet these biohackers are adamant about their right to use knowledge for their own purposes. They are not causing harm. They are experimenting on themselves, and they are standing up for their right to do so.
Yeah, and your right to do so.
And everyone's right to do so.
Yeah, it's a fundamentally a moral decision.
They don't want the power to be in someone else's hands, and they don't want to have to ask permission to make decisions about what they can do to themselves.
Unnatural Selection as a series on Netflix, it sort of demonstrates the concerns of many, the hope of others.
It's an amazingly positive message on a very scary subject.
It's a huge tapestry of possibilities of a more perfect future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the storylines show, for instance, in the genetic modification of mice. There's an experiment that's being proposed to the community of Martha's Vineyard in Nantucket, where the mice have recently been beset with ticks that are very harmful, and they're kind of a new mutant strain, and this tick population can spread this Lyme's disease and it can be throughout nature without anybody having any control over it. So there is a geneticist who is proposing to the community that they embrace as a community a conscious experiment to introduce a mouse breed that has had its DNA spliced.
What's a natural breed that's there that's been changed so that any ticks that try to infect them will die.
Themselves die. And die, so these mice will be immune to the tick disease. They will be genetically altered so that
the ticks don't
they
like
have
them.
The DNA of mice who are not susceptible to these ticks. And so then the ticks will die, but the entire species of mouse will be mutated. And so the community is really discussing this as an option and whether they have the right to interfere with nature.
Yes. See, because if they create the change, the mutation in the germline, which is in the sperm and the eggs, then it will be passed on to future generations. Initially, it sounds like a good idea. You don't want the spread of
tick diseases. Well, they definitely want to handle the tick issue.
But what are the side effects? What could possibly go wrong? What might happen? Has there ever been a case where we've introduced a foreign species into a native habitat and it worked out okay?
Right. Is there a positive scenario for this outcome, or is it all scary movie?
But then again, isn't that what nature does all the time anyway, with the winds moving bacteria from one continent to another? So there's a certain amount of change and evolution that's naturally occurring. Nature is a rampant experimentress, and she is changing things all the time. And we are in a different environments than our ancestors were.
Right. Nature may be doing things that we're not aware of all the time. And what we're talking about is doing things that we are aware of to study them so that we can become part of that natural experimentation.
Yeah, I think what we need to do personally is just to tune into the consciousness of nature herself as part of our consciousness. There's not a separation there, but that's a whole nother topic.
And what could possibly go wrong, right? Cheap, and out of control.
Yeah. Well, it's like so many other things all happening right now. I think it requires a higher awareness on our part in order to deal with all these things.
But and where does that higher awareness come from?
That's the self-transcendence that Jeffrey Martin was talking about. It comes partly from accessing the group mind of the species, because we now have the internet, which is a species nervous system that allows us to connect and solve problems like we've never done before. We have things like the Wisdom Council, which you mentioned in the last half an hour, that we're involved with dealing with issues locally, like the homeless problem or the water problem that Colonel Terry is so concerned about. All these things could be addressed in new collective ways that we're just barely beginning to explore.
All right. Just remember, we're all in this together, folks. Dr. Future and Mrs. Future will be right back after this break.
What's this next up, designer humans?
Right. Gattaca.
Yeah, Gattaca. I don't know.
There's people that are definitely well on that road ever since the human genome has been mapped.
Yeah.
A lot of people trying to use it intelligently. I'll tell you, one of the really interesting scenes from the Unnatural Selection is the biohacker, Josiah, I don't know his last name, but he did this really dramatic experiment where he was doing a public lecture about CRISPR-Cas9, and he injected himself in front of a group of people. And of course, that really got headlines because it's such a invasive thing, and yet he did it to himself.
What would you do to yourself if you could do anything?
Well, I'm very conservative. I tend to use plants to be healthy, and I don't tend to think I need to modify the plants to modify myself to be healthy. I'm old-fashioned that way. I'm not trying to accelerate my evolution.
If you could, say, have musical abilities, would you want to have them? Say, mathematics.
I have those abilities. And would I cultivate them through chemistry? Probably not. I cultivate them through more practices, meditation practices?
Yeah, well, you could practice for 20 years or you could take an injection. Which would you do? I don't think most people would think twice about it.
That's science fiction.
Well, currently, yes, but that's the direction we're heading in. In a true renaissance, things speed up. A lot of the biogenetic changes that we're talking about can occur very quickly and can done to yourself.
That's true.
Not necessarily to others unless you put it in the germline, which you could.
Mm.
If you modify your sperm or your eggs, you can put the change in the germline.
Well, I think they did a good job articulating that, of course, people feel positive about making changes when it's about alleviating disease, right?
Absolutely. That's where it makes sense based on the morbid history of dealing with disease up to
this point in time. However, as soon as you start talking about using that same technology, say, to improve your vision so that it's better than the average human.
Like a hawk's vision.
Then all of a sudden people
get
afraid because then you start having talks about genetic supremacy and about elitism and the idea of master races and all these things.
No, it isn't. What you see, it's that's where everyone goes because we're used to thinking in terms of hierarchical control systems. But you don't have master races and that sort of thing if it's democratized. That's the argument for why everyone should have this fast, cheap, and out-of-control technology.
Well, this
it's not about master races. It's about people who choose to and those that don't. Everyone's equal in their ability to choose what they want to do.
But as the cliche goes, some people are more equal than others. And
why?
Sometimes.
Why do you say that?
Because you got to fight for your right to party. No matter how gifted you as an individual may be, your individuality exists in a society where people have to give consent to what is moral for the individual, because individual rights end where societal rights are affected by them.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, hierarchical is a real thing. And it's what it is right now. And having rules for society to evolve is a real thing.
Well, we all want to be in agreement with each other. We want to be in alignment. We want people to make choices,
but
not
be
forced to do things that are someone else's will.
Freedom of choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing that was pointed out in the documentary was that, you know, how versatile nature is in terms of the number of choices that she's made in terms of creating different species. Or variations on a species, millions and millions of different variations. According to what we've discovered, that's like 0.1% of the possible changes that could be made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how much change is possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why some people who are innovators are thinking outside of the box a little bit and are aware of how these other changes could happen. They could speed things up, could make things better.
They can. The other thing that they're also showing is that even though there is so much potential for making change, for instance, in the case of that questionable injection, that injection can only change so many cells because genetic therapy is so complex and you have trillions of cells that need to be mutated for the effect to be visible. And the experimentation is such that it's like when I experimented with poison oak. I'm just writing a little question mark on my arm.
Yes.
And those cells are going to tell me if I'm allergic to poison oak.
Yeah, Mrs. Future was dropping little drops of poison oak on her arm to see if she could spell out something.
I was very determined to know if I was allergic to poison oak. And so I took a leaf and I drew a question mark on my arm. And I found out that, yes, I am in fact allergic to poison oak. I'm just graced with enough awareness that I've always been careful, so I've never had to suffer from it. But the point is still the same, that small changes for the sake of experiment and information are possible at the level of any individual who's knowledgeable enough to find out what they need to do. But large changes, such as affecting the sperm and the egg of future generations,
I got a question for you from the Big M. He wants to know, what is freedom?
Freedom as in liberty?
It's kind of an open question, right? What is the freedom to be able to do your own biogenetic engineering? You know, as long as you don't hurt others, I think, is part of the idea there. At the same time, we're all in an ecosystem. We all affect each other.
Well, what about the golden rule? Even if you're experimenting for yourself, if you're doing something that affects someone else, at what point do you have to bear the responsibility of the consequences? If you are not the only person being affected, does your freedom need to be limited? That's why in the hands of doctors, they take an oath to do no harm, because they assume that their increased knowledge will give them more ability to have an effect. And therefore, they want to self-regulate and make sure that the effect they have is helpful, not hurtful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, some of these things people are going to say yes to, and there's not much you can do about it. Like not having diseases, living longer, living forever even. Those sorts of things, choices are going to be made, and we're going to head in those directions, whether you want to or not. I think that's the thing. There is a freedom to be able to choose your path of existence.
That's right. And that is a blessing in which we of this time, we all enjoy.
And the important thing is to learn from the mistakes of the past.
Mm-hmm. And from the mistakes of others who crossed the evolutionary speed limit a little ahead of schedule.
Right. And as they pointed out in the documentary, how you can use the internet to stay in touch with those that are trying the same experiment as you, mm-hmm. and to see if indeed your HIV load has been reduced.
Sure.
By this biohack.
Yeah, it's not that different than any other kind of medical intervention. It's a freedom of choice medical intervention that's not that different than somebody who's joining a diabetes group. Right? It's like taking advantage of the increased awareness and state of knowledge to do something with your own body.
Yeah, what you give yourself permission to do. I want to point out one other interesting breakthrough discovery that I became aware of this week was how plants may be slowing the aging process in humans from their use of telomerase. Mm-hmm. There's a cellular immortality that we've been studying in plants. You know how plants can live for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. There's some research looking at how aging and the telomeres and the telomere process works in plants and how that affects human aging process. Telomerase is the enzyme that creates the DNA of telomeres, which is the compound that's located at the tips of our chromosomes, and they protect our cells from aging as they multiply. So this is a really big breakthrough. We finally have a way to study telomerase in plants and understand how different or similar they are from animals.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
A Methuselah tree, you know, is what we've been studying. The bristlecone pine tree that lives over 5,000 years.
Well, this article makes it sound like you can extend your telomeres to live longer, have less cell death. You can shorten the telomeres of cancer cells and have more cell death. You can increase or decrease according to different desires.
Yes, it's giving us amazing, almost godlike powers over our bodies. That's the generation we're in, where we're starting to expand our understanding of how our bodies, ourselves, can be played with in new and exciting ways.
Wow. Well, this has been quite an exceptional day here, my dear, in terms of the advances in knowledge.
Yes. So enjoy the day and good chatting with you, Mrs. Future, as usual.
Yeah.
And we look forward to spending another magical week with you. And all of you out there, have a great time yourselves. And, hopefully you won't suffer too much in this power failure that's coming down the tubes this week. Thanks again for listening, and thanks, Mihai, for the questions. Gabby, listening in New Jersey, appreciate your attention. Talk to you all real soon.
Hey, this is KSEO Santa Cruz, Dr. Future Show.